Onvishate parasarocha bhajam Sudurlabhorteshu chatursvapiha Tathapi naham pravrinomi bhuman Bhavat padam bhojanisevanotsukaha O my Lord, devotees who engage in the transcendental loving service of your lotus feet have no difficulty in achieving anything within the realm of the four principles of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. But, O Great One, as far as I am concerned, I have preferred only to engage in the loving service of your lotus feet. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Those who are associated with the Lord in the Vaikuntha planets achieve all the bodily features of the Lord and appear to be the same as Lord Vishnu. Such liberation is called Sarupya Mukti, which is one of the five kinds of liberation. The devotees engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord never accept the Sayujya Mukti, or merging in the rays of the Lord called the Brahma Jyoti. The devotees can achieve not only liberation, but any success in the realm of religiosity, economic development, or sense gratification, up to the standard of the demigods in the heavenly planets. But such a pure devotee as Uddhava refuses to accept all such facilities. A pure devotee wants simply to engage in the service of the Lord and does not consider his own personal benefit. Om Agyanti Midandasya Gyananjana Charakaya Chakshur Un. Chapter 4 of Third Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Uddhav is explaining to Vidura his last darshan with his dearmost beloved friend, Lord and Master, Sri Krishna. In the previous chapters, Uddhava has been describing to Vidura the wonderful pastimes of Lord Krishna. From his appearance in this world, his wonderful activities in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. Especially, he was explaining the great and special mercy that the Lord had upon him. Uddhava considered to be one of the dearmost of all the associates of the Lord. Within the Yadu dynasty, his relationship with Krishna was celebrated and worshipped by all. Here, in this particular chapter, Uddhava is describing the last time he met with Lord Krishna. Before Lord Krishna returned to the spiritual world, putting a close to his pastimes within this universe. Actually, we could say that Uddhava certainly would have rather left this world before the Lord. But it was the Lord's arrangement that he continue to live. We read in the stories of many great devotees how much they fear the disappearance of the Lord, how they cannot bear even the thought of living in this world without the presence of their beloved Lord. One such example was Haridas Thakur. Because of his complete attachment to the chanting of the holy names, he actually understood the heart of Lord Chaitanya. Who can understand the heart of the Supreme Lord? Only one who he personally reveals himself to by his own mercy. Haridas Thakur, with tears of love in his eyes, he prayed to Lord Chaitanya, "In my life I have only one more desire that is not fulfilled. Please fulfill that desire." Lord Chaitanya, he said, "Because of your devotion, certainly whatever you desire, Krishna will fulfill." He said, "I can understand that very soon you will perform the final chapter of your manifested pastimes. You will disappear from this world. I do not want to see this pastime. Please, before you leave, let my body fall with your lotus feet upon my heart, with my eyes staring upon your beautiful moon-like face, and with my lips chanting the holy names, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Let me give up my life." Lord Chaitanya responded, "How? How can you talk like this? Such a devotee like you is my very life and soul. The joy of my existence is in associating with you. What happiness will I have without your presence?" Thakur Haridas, in his genuine humility, revealed the honest thoughts of his heart. "My Lord, please do not create an illusion. I am insignificant. I am low-born and sinful. If one insect is removed from this universe, what is the loss of Lord Brahma's creation? Please fulfill my one desire." Even though Haridas Thakur was thinking, "I am so insignificant, I am so sinful, but by your causeless mercy, Advaitacharya was giving me the Shraddha before all these other great learned and qualified Brahmins. But please know, I am lower than an insect. Please fulfill this one desire and prayer." The next day, Lord Chaitanya came with his associates. But on his way, he was glorifying Haridas Thakur with so much love, it was as if he had five mouths. The devotees began to chant and to dance. Haridas Thakur, he was asked by the Lord, "How are you today?" And Haridas replied, "Whatever mercy you have for me." And then Haridas Thakur, in great humility, took the dust of the feet of every devotee there. Then he placed Lord Chaitanya's feet over his heart. In the presence of all the Vaishnavas chanting and dancing in great happiness, he unblinkingly stared upon the beautiful face of Lord Gauranga. And with tears flowing from his own eyes, he repeatedly chanted the holy names Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, his life air left his form. At that time, Lord Chaitanya, seeing the disappearance of his devotee in great ecstasy, lifted that body and began to dance with it. He danced and he danced. He could not give up his beloved associate. But somehow, Swarup Damodar Goswami restrained the Lord and informed him that the traditional funeral rites must be performed. There was a procession to the seashore, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally, with his own hands, dug in the sand and invited his associates to assist. Personally, he bathed the body of Haridas Thakur. Personally, he buried the body of Haridas Thakur. Personally, he begged the alms for the feast in honor of Lord of Haridas Thakur. And as everyone was taking prasad, he was the one that wanted to serve all the devotees. How much the Lord loves to glorify his devotees. And then he personally involved everyone in chanting after him, "All glories to Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur ki jai." So how could the Lord's devotees tolerate living without Krishna? Similarly, Murari Gupta, thinking of how the Lord may disappear and the various ways he does, he also decided that he would give up his life before the Lord would do so. But Lord Chaitanya personally had to order him not to do. Actually, after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, just day by day, devotees were dying in separation, one after another. Practically every day another devotee was dying in separation. They could not withstand their life without Lord Chaitanya. So this is the nature of the love between the Lord and his devotee. Lord Chaitanya, in mood of devotee, prayed like that, "Shunyayatam jagat saravam govinda virahename." A moment is like 12 years or more in the absence of your precious darshan, my Lord. In fact, Lord Chaitanya, in the mood of a devotee, condemned that he was living when he was not seeing Krishna. "If I had love for Krishna, why would I be in this world? If I had one drop of love for Krishna, I would have died in separation from him. But the fact that my wretched body is still breathing that this heart is still beating even though I'm not seeing Krishna. It is the evidence that I have no love for Krishna. What is the use of this life? So this is the nature of the devotees. The materialistic people, they want to prolong their wretched lives as much as possible. They're willing to spend vast expenditures of money just to get another month or another year of life, even if it's in a miserable condition. Even if a person is just laying like a vegetable, not able to move, not able to talk, still they're willing to spend lakhs and lakhs of rupees, hundreds, thousands of dollars, just to get different fluids pumped in their bodies and different machines keeping their lungs working and different machines keeping their heart beating, because they don't want to give up this body. But a pure devotee doesn't want a body, material body. He's only here because Krishna has ordered him to stay in this wretched world to preach. Otherwise, he has no attachments. Why should we be attached to this life? This world is a miserable place. A materialist is attached because of the illusion he wants to enjoy. A devotee wants to go back to Godhead. A devotee doesn't like this material body. He accepts it because Krishna has given it to him and Krishna has ordered him to use it for his service. Other than that, what business do we have in this world of birth and death? If death notice comes, we think, oh, Krishna's finally letting me get out of here and go back to the spiritual world. But as long as Krishna wants me here, we will serve. That is our only business. But serving and separation from Krishna is a great tapasya. So we can see that these great souls, how could they live without Krishna, especially after being personally associating with him? The Yadu dynasties was living with Krishna every morning, every afternoon, every evening. They were with him. They were his friend. Sometimes they were joking with him, sometimes talking with him, sometimes serving him, sometimes worshipping him, sometimes making all wonderful plans of how to make Dwarka a better place for him. They were his constant associates. In the Yadu dynasty, in the city of Dwarka, there were 16,108 queens, plus Krishna had, with each queen, 10 sons. And each of those 10 sons had 10 grandsons. And there was also Ugrasena and Devaki and Vasudeva and Rohini and so many other great personalities and so many relatives. Everyone in the Yadu dynasty was relatives. And so many servants. But Krishna made every one of them feel so much loved by him. That is his power. There were literally billions of people living in that little island of Dwarka. But by Krishna's mystic power, we don't read about any traffic jams or pollution. We only read about beautiful, spacious gardens and lakes and trees, auspicious birds singing, beautiful, beautiful palaces, each with spacious lawns and forests around. Krishna made Dwarka in such a way everyone was perfectly happy, satisfied in his association. So being accustomed to Krishna's personal reciprocation of love day and night, how could they live after he left this world? So Krishna was thinking like this. I have come, 125 years have expired, and I have performed my lila, and I have done the work that I have come to do. Paritranaya sarnam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami juge juge. I have protected and given great pleasure to my devotees. I have spoke Bhagavad Gita, established the principles of religion by my life and by my teachings. And I have annihilated all the miscreants. Kamsa's gone, Jarasandha's gone, Salva's gone, all the Putana, Trinavarta, Shakatasura, Agasura, Keshi, Parlambasura, they're all gone. Dantavakra's dead. Everything is nice. Now it is time for me to go to my next destination. Like the rising and setting of the sun, Krishna appears in one universe and then he disappears, but as soon as he disappears, he's simply appearing again in another universe. This is the Nitya Leela of the Lord. But he was thinking that how will the Yadu dynasty tolerate life without me? It will be impossible for them. Because his own sons, his own grandsons, his own friends and well-wishers and devotees, he empowered them with his own potencies. And he understood that when he leaves out of love for him, they will go completely mad. And what they will do, who knows, in their madness. Because the Yadus were mostly Kshatriyas. When Kshatriyas go mad in the ecstasy of separation, what will they do? But that was not the main reason. The main reason is he simply didn't want them to suffer the pain of separation. He wanted to take them to their next destination. So therefore, Krishna, by his own internal potency, he arranged the Yadus to go to Prabhas Chetra to perform a yajna. And in Prabhas Chetra, which is such a holy place, the river Saraswati flows. A few years ago, we took yatra with all our devotees to Prabhas Kshetra and Dwarka, very special place. And there, Krishna himself, induced by his own powers for the Yadus to start having some disagreements. Actually, Krishna staged it in a wonderful way. Krishna can give so many lessons through his pastime. Some of the young members of the Yadus, they were thinking, let us have some good fun today and insult the sages. So they dressed Samba up as a lady with sari, and they put something in his abdomen to look like he was having a baby. And they asked Narada Muni, Parvat Muni, and all others, please tell us, O great seers, will this be boy or girl? And the sages understood Krishna's will, ultimately. They were just puppets in Krishna's hands. This whole pastime was just Krishna orchestrating. So they wanted to show that you should not make aparads to Vaishnavas. So they said, oh, you want to know what will come from the abdomen of Samba? A lump of iron that will be the cause of the destruction of your entire Yadu dynasty. And then out from Samba's abdomen came a lump of iron. Hare Krishna, what to do? They were in terrible distress. We made a big mistake. We made aparad to Vaishnavas.
So they went to Maharaj Yudhisthira and they admitted to him, "O king, just see, we have this lump of iron now." So Maharaj, not Yudhisthira, Ugrasena. So Ugrasena powdered it up and just tried to get rid of it and made it into powder and threw it in the river, in the ocean, threw it in the ocean. One little piece, they couldn't make powder, so they threw that in the ocean too. Anyways, you all know this story. The powder went to where Prabhaschetra is, and it all, every little grain grew into like bamboo, iron bamboo rods. And the other piece that could not be ground was made into an arrowhead by a hunter, Jara. And so the Yadus were there at Prabhaschetra, and they started having some disagreement. Some devotees have disagreements. Two things we could learn from this pastime. One is offenses to Vaishnavas are so terrible that even Krishna will destroy his own dynasty if they offend Vaishnavas. Even his own children, he will destroy them if they offend Vaishnavas. So the clear message is that we should not offend Vaishnavas at any cost. It's the one thing that Krishna cannot tolerate. And another thing is that Vaishnavas should not fight with each other. So they began arguing, and in their argument, somehow they were drinking some beverage made out of rice. But it was not fresh rice beverage, it was aged. And that's another lesson we should learn. Should not take intoxication. And they started arguing, and one thing led to another, and soon the entire Yadu dynasty was destroyed. But Krishna, before this happened, he called for Uddhava. And he instructed Uddhava in the whole science of devotional service. One of the most important of all teachings is the teachings of Krishna to Uddhava, which compose the major part of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is called Uddhava Gita. Just as the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna instructed Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it was in Dwarka that Krishna instructed Uddhava. However, this Uddhava Gita is so elevated in its composition that Krishna is speaking and Shukadev Goswami is repeating these talks after the entire 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam has been narrated. He's describing directly the transcendental nature of the Lord, his devotees, and pure devotional service in great, great detail. And after instructing Uddhava in this way, Krishna tells Uddhava that you should go to Badrikashram. He wanted Uddhava to be the one person that was not part of the fratricidal war of the Yadu dynasty. He was giving Uddhava a great austerity. He wanted him to go on living after his disappearance. Something that was intolerable, to live in separation of Krishna. Krishna. Uddhava was given the order, you go to Badrika Ashram. There in separation from me, you should take shelter of Nara and Narayan Rishis. But Uddhav could not immediately follow that instruction. After receiving Krishna, as explained by Uddhava here to Vidura, he started going to Prabhaskshetra. And Uddhava was thinking, I'm supposed to go to Badrika Ashram, but I cannot give up my Lord. He followed behind. His love was so great, he followed Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna sat himself under a big, beautiful banyan tree. The descendant of that tree is still there in Prabhaskshetra. The place where Krishna performed this leela is marked by a beautiful set of Krishna's footprints under that tree on the bank of the holy river Saraswati. Have you been? It's a very holy place. Lord Nityananda Prabhu went and worshipped that place, as did Lord Chaitanya. So there Uddhava followed behind and met Krishna. By this time the whole Yadu dynasty had already left this world. And just then Maitreya Rishi, by the inconceivable arrangement of Krishna, he just happened to come at that time. Prabhupada calls it Agyata Sukriti. He didn't know Krishna was just about to perform his pastime of leaving this world. He just happened to be walking by. And Krishna greeted this great devotee. And Uddhava understood that Krishna is about to leave me. What was in his heart? Sometimes when loving associates are together and they are about to leave each other, it's a very difficult situation. What to speak of leaving forever within this mortal sphere? But the love of this world can never comprehend the love between the Lord and his pure devotees. Krishna gave Uddhava this wonderful, wonderful benediction while sitting under that holy tree. O honest one, your present life is the last and the supermost, because in this term of life you have been awarded my ultimate favor. Now you can go to my transcendental abode, Vaikuntha. By leaving this universe of conditioned living entities, your visit to me in this lonely place, because of your pure and unflinching devotional service, is a great boon for you. And herein, Uddhava is responding to the Lord's mercy. In today's verse, O my Lord, devotees who engage in the transcendental loving service of your lotus feet have no difficulty in achieving anything within the realm of the four principles of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. But, O Great One, as far as I am concerned, I have preferred only to engage in the loving service of your lotus feet.
Uddhav has no desire but to fulfill Krishna's desire. It is that consciousness that is the ultimate perfection and goal of life. To have no desire except to satisfy Krishna's desire. In this world, people approach God and religion with so many aspirations to fulfill their own desires. And even devotees, we have so many desires. We have desire for health, we have desire for some sustenance at least, we have some desires for sense gratification, we have desires for being appreciated and recognized. So many desires we all have. For some basic comforts. But a pure devotee, he only desires these things in as much as they help him in his service to Krishna. Otherwise, he has no concern. Pleasure or pain, what difference does it make? It is all relative. It is all temporary. But service to Krishna is the eternal longing of the soul. So therefore, a devotee calculates everything on the basis of this principle. How am I serving Krishna? How am I pleasing Krishna? This is real humility. Humility doesn't simply mean bowing down and saying, I am most fallen. Real humility is to actually give up the ego of wanting to be the enjoyer. Real humility is to put aside every other aspiration just to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And to be willing to accept anything that's favorable for that service, and to be willing to reject anything that's unfavorable. Materialists are always hungry for more and more money. Srila Prabhupada, when money came, he said, oh, it can be used in Krishna's service, let me use it. Otherwise, he had no concern for money. He called gold stool of a diseased man with jaundice. Everyone is longing for gold. That money, the hoarding of money, any quantity, whether it's 5 paisa or whether it's crores of rupees, any accumulation of money is where Kali is residing and ruling. That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Wherever there is the hoarding of money, Kali is in control of that place. The beggars in the streets here in Bombay, if they are hoarding a few paisas for their sense gratification, Kali is in control. And the people at Nariman Point in their big, big offices, they're hoarding hundreds of crores of rupees. Kali is as much there. But Srila Prabhupada, whether it was 5 paisa, or whether it was crores of rupees, like a lotus flower, nothing would stick to his lotus feet. As soon as anything came to him, he just immediately it went to Krishna. For the service of Krishna. This is humility. To utilize everything of our existence simply for the pleasure and service of Krishna. This should be our goal of life. This should be our prayer. This should be the object of our sadhana. It should be the purpose of everything we do in our life.
is to become free from the ego of wanting to be enjoyer, of wanting to enjoy this life. Die to live, it is said. We have to die. We have to kill all of our aspirations for long life and happiness in this world on the material platform. Only when we are totally dead on this level can we live with Krishna in truth. So this humility is necessary to strive for. Uddhava explains, for one who is a devotee of Krishna, Krishna gives everything. Krishna will give economic development. Krishna gives religiosity, sense gratification, liberation. It's all available for a devotee. But a devotee doesn't want any of it. Doesn't even want sarupya mukti. Doesn't even want to live in the same planet as the Lord with the same bodily features of the Lord. What to speak of sayujya mukti? Liberation from suffering. Na danam na janam na sundarim kavitam bhaja gadisha kamaye mama janamani janmaneshwari bhavatad bhakti rahayati kita. A devotee only wants service. Just wants to serve. What a glorious consciousness, to just want to serve. This is bhakti. This is what pleases Krishna. We don't want the heavenly palace of Indra. We don't want the powers and grandeur of Brahma. We don't want the mystic cities of the yogis to perform so many wonderful, wonderful supernatural miracles. Wouldn't that be fun to have mystic cities? You could read people's minds, you could control people's lives, you can manufacture anything, anywhere, just with your own hands. If you want a pomegranate from Kabul, you just say a mantra and it enters into your hand. And everybody's watching, thinking, oh, Bhagwan, I surrender to you. These are all cities we can achieve. Not even liberation from all suffering. So many sufferings in this world. A devotee doesn't care even to be free of suffering. A devotee simply wants some service. That's all. Just let me serve. Let me sweep the floor. That is a higher perfection of life, just to sweep the floor, just to wash the dhoti or the sari of another Vaishnava. That's, to me, that is millions of times greater benediction than going elevation to Brahma Loka, or achieving all the eight mystic cities, or attaining mukti. Let me just take the remnants of the devotee's prasad. Let me somehow do some service as the servant of the servant. Devotee simply wants to serve. That humility is what captures Krishna's heart, gives pleasure to Krishna. And here in this verse, Uddhava is revealing this most profound and celebrated state of consciousness, of the humility to just want to be engaged in serving Krishna's lotus feet. And it is for this reason that Krishna favored Uddhava. A devotee never wants fame, but Krishna likes to give his devotee fame sometimes. 5,000 years ago, all devotees are worshipping Uddhava. And all Uddhava wanted to do is be the humble servant of the Lord and his devotees. So let us always keep this as the goal of our life and not let any of the trappings of Maya distract our attention away from that. In happiness or distress, in honor or dishonor, in health or disease, in pleasure or pain, in life or in death, let me just serve. Let me just be the servant of the servant of the servant. Let me just make Krishna's devotees happy into his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. At this time, I would like to invite His Holiness Srila Giriraj Maharaj and His Grace Sriman Janananda Prabhu to both share their realizations with us. And if you remember Janananda Prabhu, in his previous visit, he literally captivated the hearts of all of our devotees. Janananda Prabhu, a very, very senior devotee of Srila Prabhupada, he has pioneered preaching in Southeast Asia, risked his life, and last time he was here, by his sincere, intense devotion, renunciation, and transcendental humor, he completely captivated the hearts of all of us. Do you all remember? At the time of death, we all pray we will remember. Then we will certainly be favored by the Lord. Let us welcome Janananda Prabhu to Radha. Hare
Krishna. We're very fortunate to be back here in the association of all the wonderful Vaishnavas here under the shelter of His Holiness, Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, Shishi Radha Gopinath, Shishi Gorni Thai. I really sharing realizations. We've come here for realizations. This is yesterday my wife on the train was asking, why are you going to Bombay? Who goes to Bombay? What for does one go to Bombay? Come here to be praised, maybe. I've already experienced that now. But the real essence of why we're coming to Bombay, maybe it's on the way to somewhere else, but the real point being unknown to most people that Srila Prabhupada, miracle, that even in places like Bombay, Mumbai, hellish places where people are just totally perplexed and bewildered by mad, rampant desires to enjoy this material world. In this metropolis, there are other oases, but especially we have come to this oasis in the desert. And that is the only real reason I can think of, fortunately, why we have come to Bombay, is we are relishing, cherishing memories of our fortunate visit here for a few days earlier in the year. Very sweet memories. So we were hoping to get the chance again. Krishna is so kind, Prabhupada is so merciful to give us this opportunity to associate again with all wonderful devotees here. And this is, I remember years ago, one great devotee was discussing the opulence of a temple. And the opulence of the temple, sometimes in the material world, of course, people will judge opulence by, as we are hearing, how much yellow stool we have in the form of gold, or how much beauty we have in the form of good looks, how much fame we have in the terms of praise of materialistic persons, hogs, dogs, camels, asses, and so on, how much strength we have in terms of muscle power, horsepower, how much knowledge we have in terms of mental speculation or in terms of material science, or how to enjoy the knowledge of how to exploit more, how to squeeze more pleasure out of this body. This is important knowledge. Knowledge of who is squeezing the most and the best. Or, not so much maybe renunciation, but these other factors, people, they may think this is great opulence. But in devotional life we see that the real opulence, especially in our temples, Srila Prabhupada has always said that his temples are just like Vaikuntha. More than Vaikuntha, here we are feeling like in, maybe I have no idea, but remembering Goloka Vrindavan, especially when we see all the fortunate living entities at the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath, the swans and the cows and the monkeys and the parrots and the peacocks and the horses, all the other fortunate souls there. I was just thinking, is there a space for a crow? I don't know. Some or another, there are crows nearby, and I'm also trying to get nearby the devotees here in Chaupati. And it feels like a crow in the association of all the nice, wonderful devotees here today. But some or another, even a crow, this is the mercy of Prabhupada, that even a crow can somehow or another start dancing and flap its wings in the association of so many nice devotees. So this association is what we have come for, and this is the essential opulence of Krishna consciousness, is the association which Srila Prabhupada is showering on the world, in all of the ISKCON centers around the world, wherever his books are, his devotees are, prasadam. This is his unlimited mercy. This is the real opulence. And that is manifested in the wonderful reciprocations between the devotees. It's so sweet and it's attractive. And really, this is what attracted us to Srila Prabhupada, is what keeps us in Krishna consciousness or brings us to Krishna consciousness. It even attracts a crow like me, somehow or another. So this association between devotees, this sweet reciprocation, as Maharaj was saying, Radhanath Maharaj, washing the dhoti or sari of devotees, serving them prasadam, not in show, not that we're trying to get recognized for that, but just doing it out of love or out of respect, even if we don't have love. This sweet reciprocation is the most cherishable thing. And this is the real opulence of a temple, not that when we come to the temple, somebody goes, looks at us as if, what are we doing here? Who are you? Where are you coming from? What's your problem? But rather a warmth. This is the nature of a devotee. We're sharing, I haven't got realizations, but we'll share something which Srila Prabhupada has shared, insights into the spiritual world. When Swayambhuva Manu was talking to Dhruva Maharaj, we're reading this because we were reading it yesterday on the train, trying to. Swayambhuva Manu said to Dhruva Maharaj, "The Lord is very satisfied with his devotee when the devotee greets other people with tolerance, mercy, friendship, and equality." This is the nature, one of the qualification or characteristics of Vaishnava is that he's a friend to all. He has no enemy. So, and anyone comes to a house of a Vaishnava or a temple, Prabhupada said that one feels when we enter that temple, the atmosphere should be so nice that people will not ever want to leave. This is like, I remember the first time we were so fortunate, somewhere or another, Prabhupada Krishna, the devotees, dragged us to a temple. Unwillingly, but somewhere or another were there, and it was like that, just entering into an oasis in this desert of London. And we enter in there, the whole atmosphere is surcharged with attraction because Krishna is in the center. So attractive. We never want to leave. This should be the mood. This is the mood when people come into Srila Prabhupada's association. There was nothing like it. So that'll be one little more thing. I don't want to drag on, croak a few more words, but they're glorifications of Srila Prabhupada. This is when Dhruva Maharaj returns home. A beautiful purport by Srila Prabhupada and verse. A little small writing. Dhruva Maharaj continued, "O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly, as the waves of a river constantly flow. Such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nescient ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. It will be very easy for me, for I am becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and pastimes, which are eternally existent." Srila Prabhupada mercifully gives us entrance into this verse in his purport. He writes, "The significant point in Dhruva Maharaj's statement is that he wanted to the association of pure devotees. Transcendental devotional service cannot be complete and cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. We have therefore established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone who is trying to be aloof from this Krishna Consciousness Society and yet engage in Krishna Consciousness is living in a great hallucination, for this is not possible." From this statement by Dhruva Maharaj, it is clear that unless one is associated with devotees, his devotional service does not mature. It does not become distinct from material activities. The Lord says, "Satam pasangam mamavirya sangvido bhavanti hitkarna rasayanakata." Only in the association of pure devotees can the words of Lord Krishna be fully potent and relishable to the heart and the ear. Dhruva Maharaj explicitly wanted the association of devotees. That association in devotional activities is just like the waves of an incessantly flowing river. In our Krishna Consciousness Society, We have full engagement 24 hours a day. Every moment of our time is always busily engaged in the service of the Lord. This is called the incessant flow of devotional service. A Mayavadi philosopher may question us. You may be very happy in the association of devotees, but what is your plan for crossing the ocean of material existence? Dhruva Maharaj's answer is that it is not very difficult. He clearly says that this ocean can be crossed very easily if one simply becomes mad to hear the glories of the Lord. Bhavad guna kata. For anyone who persistently engages in hearing the topics of the Lord from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and who is actually addicted to this process, just as one becomes addicted to intoxicants. We're hearing just now about intoxicants. It is very easy to cross the nescience of material existence. The ocean of material nescience is compared to a blazing fire, but to a devotee, this blazing fire is insignificant because he is completely absorbed in devotional service. Although the material world is blazing fire, to a devotee, it appears full of pleasure. Vishvam purna sukhayate. The purport of this statement by Dhruva Maharaj is that devotional service in the association of devotees is the cause of the development of further devotional service. By devotional service only is one elevated to the transcendental planet, Golok Vrindavan. And there also there is only devotional service. For the activities of devotional service, both in this world and in the spiritual world, are one and the same. Devotional service does not change. The example of a mango can be given here. If one gets an unripe mango, it is still a mango. And when it is ripe, it remains the same mango, but it has become more tasteful and relishable. Similarly, there is devotional service performed according to the direction of the spiritual master and the injunctions and regulated principles of Shastra. And there is devotional service in the spiritual world, rendered directly in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they are both the same. There is no change. The difference is that one stage is unripe and the other is ripe and more relishable. It is possible to mature in devotional service only in the association of devotees. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we thank you very much for kind association, allowing us to stay for a few moments. At least, don't know how long. We hope we'll learn to associate in the chance to serve the devotees here, some way or another. If you need any laundry done, please see me. I'll try to assist. Whatever it is, serving prasadam, all these wonderful services. King Kulashekhar prayed to the Lord, that this is the essence of my prayer. To you, my Lord, please fulfill my desire. I desire to be the servant of your servant, not the servant of the servant, servant, the servant of the servant, 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 the servant of the servant, 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 and so on and on and on and on. Whereas a Vaishnava is the true servant of everyone, because he's fully surrendered to his spiritual master and Krishna. So please forgive our audacity to speak today, and there's no humility, but at least we pray that you please be merciful to this wretched soul. We may never leave Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet in the association of his devotees, and dedicate our whole life to him. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Generally after class, Srila Prabhupada would ask for questions and comments. So Yanananda Prabhu is comments and I am questions. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and other scriptures how the devotees feel separation when another devotee leaves. Of course, the associates of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya felt separation when the Lord left, but especially the devotees of Lord Chaitanya expressed so much separation when other devotees of the Lord also left. Now, at the beginning of the class, we heard so much about separation, how the devotee does not even want to live in separation. But Srila Prabhupada emphasized more the principle of associating by following the instructions, saying that he never felt separated from his spiritual master because he was always connected by following his instructions. So on the one hand, we hear about the mood of separation, but on the other hand, we also hear about the idea of associating by following the instructions. So could you give us some relevant instructions that we can remember so we won't feel separation when you leave?
Service and separation is taught by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the most endearing means of associating with the Lord or his representatives, as you have so nicely explained. There are two ways of associating: through the Bapu, or the physical presence, and the Vani, which is to carry out the instructions of the Lord, the spiritual master, or great Vaishnavas. Bhakti Vinod Thakur had transcribed or had written a beautiful poem which was later placed upon the Samadhi Mandir of Srila Haridas Thakur. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. Vaishnavas die to live and live to spread the holy name around. The transcendental message is eternal, and the glory of a devotee's physical presence is that it is propounding that eternal sound vibration of the glorification of Krishna, the path of perfection. So to actually reciprocate with the spiritual master is to follow his instructions. One is sincere and actually offering service to the degree we are following the instruction. And that instruction is eternal. It is beyond all the limitations of this mortal world, beyond time, beyond geographical proximity. And it is in this way that Srila Prabhupada taught us by his own example how he wept in the ecstasy of the agony of separation when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur left this world. But how in that separation, the instruction of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur became even more prominent in his life. And even after several decades, after the disappearance of his Guru Maharaj, his heart was completely fixed. His life was utterly dedicated to serving that instruction. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada told us, as you have so nicely said, there is never a moment that I am not feeling the presence of my spiritual master. This is called Vipralamba Seva. It is service in separation. Service in separation means to always be fixed in serving the instruction and the desire of Guru and Krishna. And it is through this process that we make great spiritual advancement. The physical presence of a devotee is temporary. It's the vapu, or physical proximity of Guru or great Vaishnavas, is really only to instill a sense of faith and dedication in the vani, or the instruction. But whether the spiritual master is present or whether the spiritual master is not present, the real essence of our relationship is to the degree we are honestly, earnestly, and sincerely striving to carry out the order. And spiritual master never gives his own order. He is simply the messenger giving the order of the parampara, the order of Krishna. One time Prabhupada was asked, how do we know who is a proper spiritual master? He said, Krishna says, sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam rajaya. You should surrender to me. So a proper spiritual master simply repeats that message, surrender to Krishna, and is living by his example in that way. So to always think of Krishna, that is the immortal order of all great spiritual masters. And how to always remember Krishna? By following our vows, by chanting at least 16 rounds every day, as attentively as possible, by following the four regulative principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, and by trying to remain loyal and faithful to the mission that our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, has dedicated his life to developing. And how do we do that? By being the humble servant of the servant, by cooperating and working very hard according to our means to be a good example and to help others be Krishna conscious. It is very simple. One who adheres to these principles is eternally living with their guru, with the entire parampara of great acharyas, with Gaur Nitai and Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. It is our mission to spread the Sankirtan movement and to assist the Vaishnavas by working cooperatively in spreading the Sankirtan movement. And through this way, we please the spiritual master. What is more important, to please the spiritual master or to see the spiritual master? If it pleases the spiritual master, anything is perfect in our life. And we come to see the spiritual master because that will help us to become enthused to hear from him and to please him in all circumstances of our life. But you can elaborate better than me on this question that you have asked. Hare Krishna. Giriraj Maharaj. Since you have already established the precedent that one must answer the question that is asked. Please enlighten us by explaining how it is that Srila Prabhupada inspired you to leave a beautiful home in Glencoe, Illinois, to live in a rat-infested hut in Mumbai. How Krishna and Srila Prabhupada inspired you to give up a future life with so many comforts and everything, the whole world, material world at your lotus feet, to accept the position of a brahmachari or sannyasi, getting bitten by mosquitoes and catching malaria and not even having proper food to eat. Please tell us how it is that Srila Prabhupada inspired you to be such a surrendered soul.
The questions should relate to the class.
But the giver of the class has the authority to make different subjects relate to the class. The subject of the class was surrender.
Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Before I met Srila Prabhupada, I was convinced that I needed a spiritual master, that I could not achieve perfection without a spiritual master. And after I met Srila Prabhupada, I was convinced that one must follow the instructions of the spiritual master, however easy or difficult. But the first principle is to follow the spiritual master. When we came to Juhu, we were quite overwhelmed by the whole situation. Not the physical austerity. Actually, the physical austerity was relatively easy, for me at least. The difficult part was the responsibility. When I arrived in Bombay, Brahmananda Swami was in charge of the project. But within one or two days, Srila Prabhupada told him there was some difficulty in East Africa and he should return. Then Srila Prabhupada raised the question, who would take charge? So there was a meeting of devotees. And although Srila Prabhupada raised the question hypothetically, he himself more or less gave the answer. He said, so Giriraj, you will take charge? I was not qualified for the responsibility. And I really would have refused, except I was convinced about the principle that we have to follow the instruction of the spiritual master, whatever the instruction may be. So I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada, if you want. But I was really quite crushed by the weight of the order. And I could not conceive of how I would execute the responsibility. Then later on, the next day when we came in Srila Prabhupada's room, so many devotees, Srila Prabhupada looked at me and he said, so Giriraj, now the entire responsibility is on you. And like my mind said to me, how could Srila Prabhupada say such a thing? Doesn't he know how I'm already feeling? And he's saying, now the whole responsibility is on you. And then he started to laugh. But Srila Prabhupada said, as I had heard, that advancing in Krishna consciousness means taking more and more responsibility for Krishna. So I tried to surrender to the service. But it was very difficult, especially because the whole sequence of events changed when we discovered that the landlord was actually trying to cheat Srila Prabhupada out of the land. And it was really very painful. After some months, Srila Prabhupada returned, and I thought in Srila Prabhupada's personal presence, I will feel some relief. But even in Srila Prabhupada's personal presence, I was still suffering. And I asked Tamal Krishna Goswami. And Tamal Krishna Goswami explained, well, what I said was that I'm here because Srila Prabhupada wants me here. And I'm doing what Srila Prabhupada wants me to be doing, but still I'm suffering, even in Srila Prabhupada's personal presence. So what is the explanation? His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj gave a very good answer. And he said that a person may be locked in a room which is on fire. And in order to get out of the room, he has to break the glass in the window with his hand. So his hand will feel pain, but he has to do it. It's not that the hand is doing anything other than what the hand should be doing. The hand is doing exactly what the hand must do, but still it feels pain. So the analogy was very appropriate because we are part and parcel of Krishna, and Srila Prabhupada was Krishna's representative. So in one sense we were extensions of Srila Prabhupada, and we were acting on Srila Prabhupada's behalf to do whatever was best for Srila Prabhupada and his mission, even though the pain was there. But I realized later, after many long months of struggle, that my advancement was not any less because of the fact that I was struggling. And when the situation changed, I could feel so much advancement I had made during those long months of struggle, which were not perceived by me at the time. I mean, the advancement was not perceived by me at the time because of the difficulty of the situation. But when the situation changed, I realized that all along I had been making advancement, but I couldn't feel the advancement because of being absorbed in the struggle. And as far as what inspired me, apart from the understanding that serving the order of the spiritual master is the perfection of life, was Srila Prabhupada himself. He was so surrendered to his mission. He was so willing to accept any trouble for the sake of his mission. He inspired us also in the same mood to be ready to take any trouble for the sake of his mission. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would stay up late at night thinking how to deal with the problems. One incident was very instructive. I was the temple president and someone else was the GBC at the time. And there was a very difficult question whether we should do something or not in relation to getting the permission to build. And Srila Prabhupada gave the argument why we should do it. And immediately the GBC and I agreed, yes, we should do it. Then Srila Prabhupada gave the argument why we should not do it. And immediately we agreed, yes, actually we should not do it. And then Srila Prabhupada gave the argument why we should do it. And he went back and forth. And every time we agreed with his arguments. I thought of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes he also would take an argument and convince all the devotees, and then he would take the opposite side and again convince all the devotees. So the whole process, Srila Prabhupada was training us, the whole process went until well past 11 at night. And generally Srila Prabhupada was very regulated because he had to get up and translate. But well past 11, towards 12, And I was so tired, I was really just struggling to remain awake. And suddenly, Srila Prabhupada stood up and left the room. And the conclusion was that we would not do it. Then the next morning, on schedule at about 7:30 in the morning, after Guru Puja, the person that Srila Prabhupada was dealing with came for the answer. And although the conclusion from the night before was that we wouldn't do it, within 2 minutes of speaking to the to Mr. Sethi, Srila Prabhupada agreed to do it. So Srila Prabhupada's commitment was tremendous. He never wavered in his service. He never flinched in his service. And therefore, by his example, we were also inspired to try to follow in his footsteps. And he also took the devotees' problems so much to heart. Although I was a simple brahmachari and I didn't really have any personal problems, my only problem was just being convinced that I should continue the service. But I saw sometimes the devotees would fight with each other, which we should not do. We just heard it. We should not fight amongst ourselves. But sometimes the devotees would fight amongst themselves. And I think back how much time Srila Prabhupada spent just mediating the quarrels among the devotees. But he was so kind and so patient, he did it.